was for me. City of stars, there's so much that I can't see. Who knows? Is this the start of something wonderful and new? Or one more dream that I cannot make true?
Here to talk about two films, two big releases, two films that probably couldn't be further apart from one another. Damien Chazelle's La La Land, starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, and then, of course, the big Star Wars prequel, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. So for anyone listening, we are going to do a little just brief thoughts about each film independently, spoiler-free, and then we will do spoilers, heavy spoilers after that, but we'll give you a warning in case you haven't seen either one of these movies and you want to. So we're going to start with La La Land. As I mentioned, this is Damien Chazelle's film. It's his second film after the Oscar-winning Whiplash. Damien Chazelle is only about 30 years old at this point, which is sort of depressing.
Yeah.
Because this guy's a real wunderkind. Basically, the story is very simple. It's a jazz pianist, played by Ryan Gosling, falls for an aspiring actress in modern-day Los Angeles. And while there are other actors in this film, there's Rosemary DeWitt from Mad Men and some other things, and John Legend, the actor slash musician. It really is just a two-hander, this musical, starring these two very charismatic actors. So, as I said, we're just going to get into some brief thoughts at first. I mean, Luke, what did you think of La La Land?
La La Land was everything and more that I wanted it to be. So, some time ago, I didn't even know this movie was coming out until I went and saw, I think it was Moana, and I was sitting in the theater for that, and the trailer started playing for this thing, and it just captivated me to the point where I almost floated right out of my seat and applauded just at the end of the trailer. I was so enraptured by it, just ready to go for this movie. So I was nervous because the trailer had me so excited for it. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't want to be, you know, disappointed by you know, just all those expectations. So, I loved it. I thought it was a beautiful film. I used to do musical theater when I was in high school, and just with my music background, my performance background, and you know, the struggles that I know and face sometimes just as an artist and a dreamer, this movie just hit me in so many places and on so many levels.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned expectations. I had heard about this movie a while back. I had known that Damien Chazelle. Have you seen Whiplash?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great movie. Yeah, really.
We saw that at home. I'd missed it in the theaters, and I thought it was terrific. And J.K. Simmons absolutely deserved his Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. I mean, he's terrifically terrifying in that movie. And for Damien Chazelle, I really appreciated the idea that for his second film ever, I mean, I think he directed a short film before Whiplash, but this is his second full-length film. He's swinging for the fences. I mean,
this was bold.
Yeah, to make a musical, a full-on, unapologetic, old-time Hollywood musical for your second film. It reminds me a lot of that famous quote about Orson Welles, that when Orson Welles came to Hollywood for the first time, he was given a tour of the RKO studios. And they showed him, you know, here's the audio department, and here is the mat department, and here is the model department, and these are all the different things we can do. And he later described it as the greatest toy set, the greatest train set a boy could ever have. And I really feel like Damien Chazelle has that feeling. And I feel that Paul Thomas Anderson has this as well, which is this kind of just love of movies, of making movies. And even if the subject matter is depressing, which frequently Paul Thomas Anderson it is, and Damien Chazelle it is, and we'll get into that a little bit, I feel that the exuberance he has with for just simply telling a story via the art of motion pictures comes across so heavily that it is infectious. And I am really impressed that Damien Chazelle was so young. He is clearly a real wunderkind. I mean, he wrote this movie, too.
Did he really? Okay, yeah.
Imagine,
I didn't pay attention to a lot of that stuff.
Imagine the task you're setting for yourself is, I'm going to write a musical.
Yeah.
And not a, not a jukebox musical, not Mamma Mia, where you've got hit songs and you know this is going
to
work. You know, you're writing original music. That is just impressive. So I went into this film with very high expectations, too high expectations. And I'll explain that in the spoiler section.
Okay.
But this was my favorite film of the year. I think this is the best movie I saw all year. We saw it just yesterday at the time of this recording.
Okay.
And I have not been able to let it go. I have not been able to not think about it when I have seen several dozen movies this year, and most of them I've just forgotten about, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But this one is sticking with me. I think the songs are very good. I think The City of Stars is the one that Ryan Gosling plays is haunting. These two, Gosling and Stone, have unbelievable chemistry. This is their third film together, and they just completely there's no other word for it, chemistry. I mean,
they do.
Perfect.
What's
together.
Their, remind me of their other two movies real quick.
They did Crazy Stupid Love.
Okay.
And then they did Gangster Squad, which nobody liked. So but then they went to this one. And, this movie's also a love letter to, as much as it is about a romance, it's a love letter to, as you talk about, you know, being an artist, the tagline for this movie is, here's to the fools who dream.
Yeah.
This is about two people that really have a goal. And, in the face of all reality telling them that it's not going to work, they refuse to give up. And that is heroic, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It really is. And so I really thought it was a beautiful movie. It had me completely caught up from virtually the very beginning. And there's a part where I got really upset because it was going in a way I didn't want it to go. And, but that's the strength of the film. I mean, Chazelle got me to really care about these two people and Gosling. And this film is very funny. It has a lot of laugh out loud moments. I think it's terrific. I would really, would I recommend it to anybody? I think so, because I think it's an excellent piece of cinematic art. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know if it is for everybody, because it is very unusual.
It's probably not for everybody. I mean, like, I have coworkers who this is not for. They just won't get it. They won't care. But this is an outstanding piece of film, regardless.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would recommend it to anybody too, whether or not they, will go on the same journey that I went with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So okay, well, so that's for any of you who haven't seen it yet and you want to see it and you don't want to be spoiled. I'm going to say stop here. Stop at this point in the show. Jump ahead to our review of Rogue One, where we're going to do something similar. But if you proceed, know right now we're going to get into the spoilers of this movie. So if you don't want to ruin for you, don't go any further. Okay? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're
You've been warned.
Now we're in spoiler territory.
Okay.
Okay. This movie, as I said, was my favorite film of the year. I think it's the best movie I've seen all year. And it was also very disappointing to me because I really wanted these two kids to get together.
Oh, well, yeah.
And
who didn't?
They don't. And, you talked about expectations.
Sure.
And I knew about this movie, as I mentioned earlier in the year, like in January or February, I'd heard that Damien Chazelle was working on a musical, and I thought, holy crap, that sounds really cool. Because the musical is one of the cinema genres that I came to very late. I didn't appreciate for a very long time. And then as I got older, I really started to get into them. And so now I really am kind of becoming a fan. And I love the idea of a modern musical. I just thought that was terrific.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
This year, it's become a cliche. This year, 2016, has been, one kind of terrible thing after the next.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
It seemed too perfect that Hollywood was going to give us a big, splashy, unabashed, unapologetic musical at the end of it. And it just seemed like kind of how the reason Star Wars was so huge in 1977 is because after a decade of confused anti-heroes where everything was gray, there was no black and white, here was a guy telling you a story of black and white, good and evil.
Okay.
You know, you're coming
out. I see where you're going.
You're coming out of the Vietnam War, and you don't know who the good guys are anymore and the bad guys. And here's George Lucas telling you, bad guys. That's the guy in black. He's the bad guy. And it's simple, and that's why Star Wars took off when it did. And maybe if Star Wars had been released 2 years earlier, it would have flopped. Had it been 2 years later, it might have flopped. But it came out at exactly the right moment. And that is how I walked into La La Land.
Okay.
I walked into La La Land saying, whisk me away, Damien Chazelle.
Yeah, because, you wanted to be picked up carried away.
Yeah, exactly, because this year has been a kick in the nards every single week, it seems. But at the same time, it's not fair to ask that of a movie. That's not Damien Chazelle's job. That's not the movie's job. And it's not a movie's job.
I wish it was someone's job.
I wish it was, sure. I wish somebody would offer to take
it. It is not
job.
The job. It was not Damien's job, no. It was not this movie's job.
Right. It is not Damien Chazelle's job to just give me a smile, because then he's not making art anymore. It's fan fiction, basically. And so this movie upset me deeply that these two don't get together. It bothered me profoundly. And the other comparison I will make is the Before series. I've mentioned before, I think on maybe the show, Before Sunrise, the first film in the series by Richard Linklater, is my favorite film of all time. And I loved Before Sunset. And then I saw Before Midnight. And in that movie, this couple that I've been following for 20 years are sniping at one another. And Before Midnight is a really dark movie. And okay. I think Before Midnight is a great movie, but I don't want to watch it because it's so upsetting. Because these are characters I deeply care about, and they don't like each other in that movie. And so the fact that, okay, so at the end of this movie, when they do the 5 years later, and we see that Mia is with someone else, and, you could hear I'm talking a lot.
You could hear the air go out of the room?
Yeah, when she kisses the guy and you see that it's not Ryan Gosling. Did your audience have the same reaction?
I went to a really early show because I wanted to see both that and Star Wars on the same day without having either of those movies spoiled for me. So I was in the theater at 10 o'clock in the morning. So there weren't a lot of people. But to me, it was just like it was like getting punched in the stomach.
Yeah.
You know, all the air left me at that moment. But, to me, it's funny. I liken it to the Wonder Years, I think. It would be like one of the closest things that I could think of where, here you've got like all these seasons with Fred Savage's character and Winnie Cooper. And they're like the couple you're rooting for throughout the entire series. Did you watch the Wonder Years at all?
I did.
Yeah. And you get to the last episode and you find out, and time happened. And guess what? They both moved on and found somebody else, which is, very realistic in terms of what life is like and the different curves that and roads that, we take as we journey on from one point to the next. It's bittersweet because it's very honest, I think. I would have loved for them to get together, but I think the story that they told was very raw and very true, especially in light of it being the story of two people who are pursuing their dreams at every cost, even the two of them.
The whole idea of how much are you willing to give up for your dreams is very powerful. Because
and even as she's about to leave for France, you kind of see the writing on the wall there. She turns to him. She says, "I'll always love you," and he kind of says the same back to her, which is kind of an admission of, I don't know where life's going to take me. I just want you to know I'm always going to love you, no matter what. And no matter who I end up with, you will always have this place in my heart that's real special.
Yeah, I mean, were you like me where, okay, when we see the second version of their first meet in the piano bar, and yeah. instead of him blowing her off, he embraces her and they kiss and we get this whole arc in it. And I thought, for a second, I was like, wait, what's going on? Where are we? And then I thought, oh, okay, this is what actually happened. You know, so Chazelle really had me because my stomach flopped because it was like, oh, he's throwing me off by the thinking that they're not together, but they really are together. And then we found out, no, they really are not together. And I just was like, Dad, you son of a bitch, Chazelle.
I think what happened to me in that moment, there was a brief moment where I thought, is this what actually happened? And then I realized, oh no. He's telling her the story of what he wished would have happened, or the Hollywood story, as it would, you know, as it were, which really fits in with just the whole theme of the piece of the Hollywood chasing this Hollywood dream. He's telling her the Hollywood story in that moment and their Hollywood story. So, and it's correct. What broke me in that segment too was, you know, he corrects all his own. All of the mistakes that he made. He shows up to her theater performance.
Right,
he's like cheering her on in that moment. You know, all the fights that they had are glossed over. And to me, yeah, that's what broke me is he was like, this is the story I wish we could have told together. Yeah. I was wrecked with that piece. Holy crap. Like, that was the closest I've maybe come to an ugly, ugly cry in a movie since, I think, Big Fish.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. It's like the actor that plays her husband, Tom Everett Scott, they give you no indication from That Thing You Do. They give no indication that she is unhappy with him. In fact, you get the sense that she's blissfully happy. They have a wonderful child.
Yeah.
You know, and she's smiling, and they seem to, like, when she says, hey, do you want to just blow off this thing and go get something to eat? He's like, yeah, sure. So you never get any idea that this is not a good relationship. At the same time, I hate Tom Everett Scott. You know what I mean? Like, I hate that character because I'm like, what are you doing in my movie? Get out.
Yeah, get out of here.
Get out of here. Yeah, exactly.
They didn't paint him at all to be doofy or kind of a jerk or anything. It just looked, you know, this is life. They've moved on. It's just life.
Yeah. I mean, I think the two performances, these two are just terrific together. I think Gosling is very, very funny. I love the whole relationship he has with his sister and the whole bit about the bench that Charlie Parker once sat on. Get up. Don't sit on the bench. Don't sit on that. And he's just living this, you know, hard scrabble life. He doesn't really give a shit about the niceties of life. He just wants to be a jazz musician. And I think the conversation that he has with John Legend was interesting, where John Legend's character is saying, you know, you say you love this art form, but you only want to, you don't want it to grow. You want to just keep
it in the past.
You want to just play for the same 90 people. Well, they're all dying off. So what do you, and I, that seemed like that, you know, that felt like a meta comment that Chazelle was making to himself, because here he is doing an old timey genre that most people aren't going to care about.
I felt like now that I know that he actually wrote that movie script as well, I think there's a lot of meta comments in that, you know, just in terms of Emma Stone writing her own play and creating the thing she wanted to see in the world rather than waiting for it to come around.
Yeah. The scenes of her auditioning are riotous, and then also
those are hilarious.
Also heartbreaking, though, when she does that great performance on the phone, and that idiot woman is behind her waving a card. Like, you know, you feel so. And part of it is that Emma Stone's face is like, when she starts to cry, it's like you've kicked a puppet.
You cry.
I mean,
when she cries, you cry.
Oh,
she's amazing.
Yes,
I like Ryan Gosling. I think he's great. I love Emma Stone. I don't think I've ever seen her. I've never seen her and been disappointed in her. I've maybe been disappointed by a movie she's been in.
Sure.
She's outstanding. She's so good.
Yeah.
Anytime she's on screen, like, bam, that's where my eyes are going right there. Just because she's got it, man, that special spark.
That moxie. You need the cigar and the whole bit. Yeah, I mean, she is luminous in this movie. I mean, I think she's great, and I've joke with, you know, with Darlene Tracy about, you know, we all have the list. You know, she's on the list. So, yeah. But, I mean, but she really, Chazelle gives her, a ton of great close-ups where she just, and you know, it's funny. Again, I'm going back to Orson Welles. I don't mean to be, but I can't. These are the stories, I think. I read another thing where Orson Welles apparently was on a movie set once with Gary Cooper.
Okay.
It wasn't a movie they were working on together. He just happened to be on the set. And he watched Gary Cooper. This was early on in Cooper's career. And he watched Gary Cooper. And after it was, I think it was a John Ford movie. And after it was over, Orson Welles was aghast. He was like, this guy's not doing anything. He's a stiff. What are you guys going to do? I mean, this guy is terrible. And then they go and they watch the footage. And all of a sudden, Gary Cooper just filled the space. And Welles saw it. And he said, I get it now. On film, this guy is a movie star. He is. When you see him in real life, it doesn't translate. But when you see him on screen. And I feel that way about Gosling and especially Emma Stone. They are movie stars in the best sense of the word in this movie. I mean, the scene of them in the planetarium, the Griffith Observatory that they go to after they go to see A Rebel Without a Cause is, you know, I know it sounds
cheesy. It's just enchanting.
It sounds cheesy to say it's movie magic, but it really is. The idea that in the middle of this very sort of gritty movie, they can just start floating off into the sky.
Oh yeah, and you don't, I want to see that happen.
You don't
movie.
Chuckle at it. You don't laugh. You don't.
No.
You buy it. You're totally.
You know what I find was interesting too is it seemed like a lot of the just even the techniques. My wife and I were talking about this afterwards. It seems like a lot of the techniques used weren't modern techniques. Like older, you know, they weren't CGI'd up in the sky. They were hanging from wires and. Lighting was, you know, I felt like the use of lighting was not, it just felt like a really classic, classic form of movie magic, the way even just lighting was used in the movie, you know, like bringing it back to an older day when those were the special effects at your hand.
That's right. I noticed that in the scene where she comes down, when she's being lowered back down to the ground. And I'm like, this is not a digital effect. They probably put her on wires and then just painted them out. But, yeah, it's all this is done in camera. And it gives it that feeling of reality. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, I have to admit, like, anytime I see any movie set on a movie lot, which this movie has a scene because she works at the Warner Brothers coffee shop across the street from basically the offices, my heart starts to flutter. A little, because I want to work at a movie studio where I get to go on the lot. I don't need to hang out with movie stars. I don't need any of that stuff. I just want to
make the coffee.
I do. I want to go to the lot every day. And I've had one chance in my life to be on a movie lot, and it was, you know, I've talked about it on the show before. It was one of the great experiences of my life. It felt powerful to me in a way that I can't explain. And to see these two people walk around and look at, oh, look, that's the window that Humphrey Bogart stuck his head out of in Casablanca. And here's this it's very, very powerful. And again, the idea that, you know, your dreams, I don't know, you know, this movie makes me think about, it made me think about a lot. You know what I mean? It made me think about how much have I given up for the things I want to do and how much do I give up for other people? You know what I mean? Like,
I completely know what you mean. Yeah. I have the same reaction. Whenever I see a movie like this, or I go to a concert, or I go and see something theatrical, I always get this feeling like, what the hell am I doing on this side of the stage?
Right.
I want to be on the other side of the stage. Yeah. And it's the, you know, it's that question of who were you trying to please that took you down the path that you're on, or what were your fears that got in the way? Not like it's over or anything like that, but I mean, those are real questions, and we make those concessions all throughout our whole life. Whenever I watch something like this, it brings that up for me is, you know, what is it I'm giving up right now that I don't want to be giving up, and am I fighting for it like I really want it, you know?
Yeah,
gosh, it destroys me. It tears me apart.
At the end of this movie, you don't get the sense that either one of them is unhappy.
Yeah.
You know, Sebastian has gotten his club. He's got the exact club that he wants. It's popular. He's appreciated for bringing, you know, his love of jazz. And then you get the sense that Mia has gotten everything. I mean, there's a brutal shot, and I don't, of when he gets out of his car at the end and he walks by a billboard and there's her face on it because it's a movie poster. And I thought that was a wonderful moment where Chazelle does not have Gosling stop and look at it as if it's the first time you've seen it. We're seeing it for the first time, but he's probably seen it a dozen times. And I have to think that has to be a very particular pain that people that live in that area have to deal with. Because if you date a movie star and then you break up, you see that person everywhere. You know what I mean? I presume you have exes. I have exes. I don't see my exes anymore. I don't see them around anywhere. But imagine if you had to see your ex 20
feet billboard.
Or on television every day. That would probably really be very upsetting. But
especially
I love how subtle that is. Gosling just walks by it and you have to kind of catch it really fast. He doesn't underline it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the question too. You know, when you think about like, what are you willing to fight for to chase the dreams that you have, and what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to lose? They had to lose each other, which, you know, they got everything they got what they wanted. They got their dreams, per what it was stated, you know, at the beginning of the movie, but they missed out on that story that was told at the very end through Ryan Gosling's piano piece.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the music overall?
Music was outstanding. I already own the soundtrack and have been listening to it all day. I've got the vinyl coming so I can listen to it like a good old hipster.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's interesting too because Ryan and Emma don't have amazing musical theater style voices.
They're pretty raw.
But there's a neat honesty with that I think comes through too. I felt the same way when I was watching Les Mis, that none of the singers were traditionally good singers in terms of musical theater, but their ability to convey their emotion through the voices that they have, and with the intimacy that you get through close-up shots with, you know, musical theater on screen, you don't need to be as loud or as bombastic, really. But so there were times that I was like, oh, maybe the singing could be a little bit better. But then ultimately, though, especially now, even that I'm going and listening to the soundtrack, I'm like, no, this was just fine. This was exactly what the movie needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. It would be weird if all of a sudden sort of this raw, honest movie, this pitch-perfect voice comes out of Emma Stone or comes out of Ryan Gosling. So, yeah. That,
right.
See that. Because, yeah, they're not.
Here's to the dreamers!
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All
of a sudden.
Merman
yeah,
on it or
yeah right. I mean, the only real song of that kind of caliber is the opening number, which is the dance number set on, I think it's the 405, the much maligned 405, which is just
poor 405.
Which is just this traffic snarl, and it's kind of funny because that opening number where everybody's dancing together, you're really being set up for a movie that you're not going to get, because that opening number is all, hey, let's put on a show, how you doing, and you're thinking this is going to be a happy movie, and then you're like,
this is really honest and raw, and now I'm hurting inside.
I will say that the little moment at the very end of the movie where she, you know, because of course she's in his bar accidentally, and then he sees her, and we see their alternate reality unfold, and then she gets up to leave, and he notices, and she stops, and she turns, and they see each other, and they give each other that little nod.
Yeah.
That broke my heart because.
Yeah.
And I mean that in like a good way, because it was an acknowledgement, as you said, they're always going to love one another, and they are not mad at each other. Like, they're not like, I don't like you. It's no, I love you. It just didn't work out. But there's a that little
moment. It's cathartic.
Moment,
that smile. It was the subtlest of smiles from Ryan Gosling too. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. like he had, in that moment, I felt like he cut the cord and said, you're free. You know, you're free from this dream that we had, you know, go be who you're supposed to be. And I'll be who I'm supposed to be. And we can do that separately, but yeah, I'll always love you. Holy crap, man.
Oh man.
This movie's really haunted me quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I'm mad at Chazelle for not giving me the movie that I wanted, but that's again, not his job. And it is a testament to him that I cared as much as I did, because I've seen a lot of movies where I just don't give a shit about what's going on screen. You know?
Oh yeah.
I don't care. You can throw millions of dollars at the billions of dollars at the screen. And I've seen, you know, where I'm like, I don't give a rat's ass what's going on in this story at all. And yet I was completely invested in these two. I think that, again, the jokes are really funny. I love the whole bit about where he goes to pick her up at her house. And, you know, he's like, I'm going to be here at 8 o'clock. And he's there at 8:04 and she's not there. And he starts to drive away. And she's like, I was getting coffee. You know, like that bit is great.
There are so many good little moments. And really subtle stuff, too. You know, you kind of mentioned their look back to each other at the very end of the film when she's leaving his bar. I thought that Emma, when she walked into the bar and down the stairs and she sees Seb's, the sign that she designed.
Yes.
The musical note is the apostrophe. Her look, the look that comes over her face in that briefest of moments, like just took my breath away. You know, that oh my gosh, here's this love that I had and this life that I had, and now suddenly it's right back and it's staring me in the face. She captured that so well. Like, hats off to her. It was amazing. But yeah, just so many great small moments. I loved those audition pieces too. I like to listen to the Nerdist podcast. I don't know if you ever listened to that. It's Chris Hardwick and his friends, and they interview a lot of movie stars and people in Hollywood. And one common thing that they like to rail on and joke about is the completely inhumane process of auditioning for a role.
Right.
And so it made me laugh, because all those things that were happening, you know, somebody ordering a sandwich while she's pouring her heart out and crying, are things that, you know, I guess really happen to people.
How soul crushing is it got to be when she does, I think it's the first audition we see, and she comes out and sitting in the hallway are like 9 other actresses that look just like her. That's got to be so soul crushing to just know that you're just a type. You're not even unique. That has got to be absolutely. I mean, the closest equivalent I can think of is that there was a time at a comic convention where I was showing my portfolio to somebody at DC, and while this person was flipping through my book, the person they were sitting with decided to talk about what they were going to get for lunch and kept distracting the person from looking at my book.
And they're turning pages and not looking.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I wanted to reach over the table and murder that other person, because I'm like, I flew all the way across. This was at the San Diego Comic-Con. I'm like, I flew the way across the country, you know, and I'm here in this moment. Can you talk about what you're getting on your pizza a little later? Could you maybe do me that solid? Nope. And, the person who had my book went flip, 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 flip. There you go. Thanks. And handed it back.
That's great. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. And I made my mind up. Oh, okay. I'm never subjecting myself to this again. This is just, I, you know, and again, it makes me think about, should I have tried harder? Should I? No, you know, I'm not.
Yeah. What this movie ended up doing to me too is, you know, just as an artistic person myself, like it, my heart already breaks for the average artist, because, you know, on a daily basis, you're kind of putting your heart out and pouring yourself out onto the page or in a dance or, you know, whatever your theatrical performance is. And to just continually get slapped down, or just the struggle of, you know, well, that one didn't work. I'll try again. I'll pick myself up. I'll try again. Well, that one didn't work. I'll pick myself up and try again. You know, seeing them go through that struggle and her even going home at a certain point saying, like, I'm done. I can't, this is like emotional abuse to myself. I can't do this anymore. You know, I'm out. It really resonated with me. There are times I sit down, even now, I'll go down to my art board and I'll start drawing and I'll think, like, what the hell am I doing this for? I think the only answer you can give yourself is you're doing it because you love it, and it doesn't really matter what anybody else says about it. Kind of, what Ryan Gosling's character said, Sebastian's character, F them, F everybody else. And that's kind of how you have to approach your art. But yeah, man, it really made me feel very deeply for every person I know that is in the arts, that is out there trying to make it work, full steam ahead. Like, kudos to each and every one of you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I would absolutely recommend this movie, despite the fact that, like I said, it really hit me, give me an emotional wallop, and I really wasn't prepared for it. I would absolutely recommend it to anybody. And if you want to see it, go see it on the big screen. This is a big screen. I mean, Chazelle really made me chuckle that the first shot is the logo for CinemaScope. And it's cut off on the left and right because the screen isn't big enough. And then the screen widens and you get the old-timey Technicolor CinemaScope logo, which I thought that was him really kind of laying down a marker. Like, damn it, we're doing this. We're doing this. I don't care. This is what we're doing. I think it's – I don't know if I want to use the word masterpiece. That gets thrown a little too easy, and the film's too new, I think, to be able to assign it that nomenclature.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bold – thing. It's a bold piece of cinematic art, and it deserves to be seen, and I'm glad that it's getting the recognition it's getting. It's surely going to be nominated for Best Picture. Maybe not win Best Picture, but certainly nominated, and same thing with Emma Stone and probably Ryan Gosling too. And Chazelle's a real genius. Just a guy with a really unique vision. He's able to bring it to the screen, and this took real guts, and I'm glad I went on this journey. I think it's a terrific, wonderful movie, and so, like I said, even though I sound a little down on it, it's just because it made
you're not
me,
really you're,
no I'm just, not really it made me feel so much, and that's what you want out of a movie.
Yeah It was bold, it was colorful, it was exuberant, it celebrated joy and pain, it had so many wonderful things to it. So yeah, I would highly, highly recommend this movie to anybody.
Yeah. All right. It's La La Land. Yeah. Everybody go see it. It's just wonderful. You don't get to see a lot of movies like this, and this when one comes along, you got to take advantage of it. So, okay, well, that's going to do it for La La Land. We are going to take a break. We're going to run some podcast promos, and when we come back, Luke Skywalker and I are going to discuss the other big release of this weekend, which was Rogue One, a Star Wars that's called production value. When we come back, we're going to talk about Rogue One.
I made that with my mouth.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Be right back.
Oh, adolescents this generation have no respect and are a far cry from my sweet Jane Eyre and her friend Helen Burns. Why, just this afternoon I was
Stella.
Walking across, and you know what? Men too. Well,
Stella?
Serious men like the tragic Mr. Rochester and teachers, pa! They're all like the villainous Mr. Brocklehurst.
Hey, Stella!
Yes, Thomas?
As much as I enjoy indulging your insanity, we have a promo to record.
Oh dear, and what might that be?
That is you and I telling everyone that we have a brand new podcast out there. It's called Required Reading with Tom and Stella. Once a month, we will take a look at a single work of literature, discuss it, analyze it, and determine if it's worth its place in the canon.
Oh dear, that sounds delightful.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. And you can find us on the Two True Freaks Network, which is at twotruefreaks.com.
Oh yes, Required Reading with Tom and... Why is it Tom and Stella? Why can't it be Stella and Tom?
It rolls off the tongue better?
Okay.
Well, that was easy. So, required reading with Tom and Stella at twotruefreaks.com. Thanks for contributing to the promo there. You did a great job.
Oh, you are so welcome.
Star Wars, give me those Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, don't let them end. Star Wars, those dear and Star Wars, talking about Star Wars on a podcast.
I'm Ryan Daly, and welcome to...
And I'm the Irredeemable Shag.
Dude, what are you doing?
What?
Give Me Those Star Wars is my show.
Well, you're part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, so it's really our show.
But if you show up on the promo, people will think you're the co-host.
I'm not?
No, the show will have rotating guests.
You just took that idea from my Justice League International podcast.
You took that idea from my Secret Origins podcast.
And you took that idea from Dead, Both, and Spies.
That was my podcast.
Wait a minute. I sang the theme song with you.
So?
So, technically, I appear on every episode. I'm part of the foundation of this new Star Wars show.
That's true.
So, you want to take this from the top, or what?
I'm Ryan Daly. Join me and a galaxy of guest stars on Give Me Those... including the Irredeemable Shag, whose voice you will technically hear on every episode, on Give Me Those Star Wars...
The official Star Wars show of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Available on iTunes and Stitcher and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
All right, and we're back, and we're here to talk about Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
I'll just do sound effects.
Boy, if they ever need to replace... who's the guy that did the special the sound effects for Star Wars? I'm blanking out on his name. I hate it. Everybody's going to hate us who does that.
Dirk Maggs?
No.
Dirk Maggs? No.
Screaming at us now. I hate when people do that. Anyway.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. No. So anyway, yeah, we're talking about Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Okay. Luke, what did you think of this?
Okay. I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought it was... it felt like... Honestly, it felt to me like a Star Wars video game. Slightly more than a Star Wars movie. It reminded me. Did you ever listen to the radio drama versions of Soldier for the Empire or any of that storyline that came out some time back? It was a graphic novel first, I think.
No,
It kind of had a little bit of that sort of flavor to it. But yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it. I would maybe see it again, but I don't need to see it again.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I've seen it. Oh, by the way, Ben Burt is the name we were trying to recall.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Ben.
Yeah. When I hear,
forgive us.
If there's a hell for podcasters, it is a world where all the podcasts you listen to are just people trying to recall names that you know. That's 'cause it's just the most maddening thing in the world. You know.
I
was listening to something today, and I'm like, Wolf of Wall Street, the movie you're listening to. Anyway. I've seen Rogue One twice already.
Okay. All right.
I think it is a superb movie. Half.
Yeah.
I think the first hour of this movie is slow, meandering, not terribly memorable. I do not believe Forrest Whitaker needs to be in this movie at all.
No.
I'm kind of amazed that at the screenplay stage, nobody said...
Hey, we could loop this.
We
right
don't
out.
Need this character. Why do we have? Why do we need the characters to find the girl, to find the guy, to find the other guy? Why don't we just have the guy? Why don't we just have the guys find the girl to find her father? They boom
and develop the characters a little bit more along the way.
So they go to these planets that to me are very unmemorable.
Yep.
They're just going from planet to planet to planet that to me all seem the same. They're all just giant rock formations. Think about how distinct the worlds were in Empire Strikes Back. Hoth, Dagobah,
yes.
Bespin. Incredibly memorable, you know, and I don't know why it's so hard to make planets seem different nowadays. So, okay.
I don't know. A lot of desert planets I'm seeing these
right.
days.
I mean, they go to the planet.
We really like desert planets.
Yeah, yeah. Now, so the first hour of this movie, I really was kind of like, and it was sort of what we talked about with La La Land, where I was deeply invested in La La Land. And in the first hour of this movie, I was not. I was really not that interested in this story. I liked K2SO, voiced by Alan Tudyk. I thought he was funny.
Yeah, he was all right.
The two leads, I thought were both kind of sullen. And I was like, this isn't now. But at the point where, and we're trying to stay spoiler free for this little part here, but to me, once they get to the actual heist, the actual getting of the plans, then the movie snapped into gear, and I loved it. So I would kind of agree
with that.
It is literally a movie in two parts, where the first part I don't care about, and then the second part I absolutely loved.
So can I tell you?
I don't know how to judge that when, you know, because I think it's half, and this is the phrase I used for the review I wrote on 13th Dimension, it's half a classic. And I don't know what you call half a classic, because it's not a classic. It's half a classic.
Sick? Class? I don't know.
Something like that.
So here's a funny story, too, because so my wife and I went and we saw La La Land at 10 in the morning, stopped for lunch because that movie ended. It was like 12:30. We went and grabbed lunch, and then we hurried back to the theater at 2 o'clock when we watched Star Wars. So my wife, and then because I bought my tickets so late for Star Wars, we had front row seats. So we were like right in the middle of it. So my wife had sensory overload, and she kind of just shut down for this first hour of the movie. On our drive home, she says to me, like, so what was the first half of the movie? Like, describe, you know, when did she meet these guys? And I said, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember when she met those guys. I think she was, like, here and then this. But, yeah, so, I mean, the sad truth about it was the whole first part of the movie. I mean, right to your point, like, I didn't remember it. I didn't remember it until Jen called up IMDb and read the recap, you know, read the synopsis. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what happened. So, yeah, kind of forgetful that first half.
Yeah. But then, like I said, once it clicks into gear, it really clicks into gear. I mean, I loved everything about the second half.
Second half was fun.
I really thought it's like a Star Wars movie. And, you know, they were talking about how this was a big Disney was worried that this was a big experiment. I mean, can we do a Star Wars movie that's not a Skywalker saga movie? And, you know, I didn't go into it with any worries about that. And that's probably because I've been reading Star Wars comics since I was a kid. And the Marvel Star Wars comics had to, by their very nature, downplay the main characters because they couldn't do anything with them, you know, in between movies. So they had to kind of focus on it. And so I never had any problem with the idea of Star Wars not being a Luke Skywalker movie. And so I didn't go into this with any trepidation. And this movie is doing really well at the box office. And it's, you know, it's very successful. And so I'm glad that, you know, that Disney knows, oh, okay, we don't have to do a Skywalker saga movie. We can just do a movie in this world, and it can be a slightly different genre movie, and it'll be successful.
Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see how far they want to go with this. I mean,
that would be interesting.
Can you do a teenage romantic comedy in the Star Wars universe? Can you do a
let's draw a line somewhere, Rob.
Well, I don't.
Do you need to see that?
Do I need to see? I don't need to see any of these things. But no. I mean, I think that's an interesting idea of what you could really, in terms of what kind of filmmakers you could unleash on the Star Wars universe if you really wanted to get creative. And so, ultimately, I really did enjoy this movie a lot. I did think the first half not terribly memorable, but then, like I said, I really enjoyed the second half. I think it took a lot of guts for the movie to sidle up to Star Wars as much as it does, because that's playing with fire. When you put yourself right up against one of the great cinematic achievements of all time, you're basically saying, compare us. And that is really risky. And this is something else I said in my review for 13th Dimension, where it's like, that is like saying, hey, I'm going to do this movie that features, where it's all about the guy that gave Charles Foster Kane his sled. You know, you're really taking a risk because you're literally touching film history, and that can be risky. And I think the second half especially really does pay it off. And I think it was gutsy to do some of the things they did, and we'll get to that in the spoiler section. But ultimately, sure. I think this was a successful movie. They can learn from it. We all know there was probably a lot of tinkering. Virtually half the scenes in the trailer are not in this movie.
I know they went back for massive rewrites.
Yeah.
That, which concerned me greatly when I read about that, so. Okay, yeah.
Did you have a favorite character in particular? I mean, you said none of them were terribly memorable to you, but is there one that
That's a good question. Did I have, not really. They were all kind of equally there, okay. I guess, which is, I don't want to be down on it because it still ended up being a fun movie, but there wasn't anybody that really stood out that I was like, oh man, that guy, that was really good. Maybe Darth Vader. Darth Vader had some surprise stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
I would say Darth Vader.
Okay.
Would be my favorite character. I liked Jin. The funny one thing that was really distracting to me is the actress, kind of looks not entirely, but somewhat like a young version of my mother. Okay. So I was conflicted.
Interesting. Okay. That's interesting. We may have to unpack that at another show or something. But
maybe in counseling too. I don't know.
Yeah, I was surprised that she, Felicity Jones as Jyn Erso and Diego Luna as Cassian Andor, were so sort of similar temperamentally. Like, I really thought that she was going to be the kind of gruff, downbeat one, and Diego Luna would be sort of like the Han Solo, but he was kind of a downbeat guy too.
Yeah, so they were all kind of downbeat.
Yeah, they were both sort of just kind of grumpy, like, I don't really want to be here sort of thing. And that's, you're not used to that in Star Wars. You're kind of used to the sort of high adventure. I really liked Ben Mendelsohn as Krennic. I think he actually gave us a kind of more well-rounded Empire character. I mean, like, unlike Domhnall Gleeson in The Force Awakens, which I think was a – I think The Force Awakens is a superior film to this one, mm-hmm. just – but like Domhnall Gleeson in that movie is just complete cartoon. He's just total snarling. The new order, you know.
Yeah, like I could see this villain. What's the actor's name again?
Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah, but I could see like the character he portrayed going home to his wife and kids at the end of the end of the day, petting the dog and being like, "Yes, we're going to go destroy a world tomorrow. I'll see you, honey. I love you."
Yeah,
bye.
Right.
You know, have a nice day.
When he approaches in the opening scene where he approaches Galen Erso, and Galen says something like, "You know, this is a simple life." And there's this one great little moment where Mendelsohn kind of puts his head down, and it's a visual, so you won't be able to see it, obviously. But he kind of just goes like he just he doesn't do it that demonstrably, but he kind of just does a little facial gesture that I'm like, I've never seen any Imperial officer in any of these movies ever do. He's like a real person who's frustrated.
Seemed very real for an Imperial officer. Yeah. Very, very, a lot more dimension to him than we've gotten out of previous villains.
Yeah. So I think that was good. So I mean, like I said, it's a Star Wars movie. There's a limit to how much, the prequels are not showing me. There isn't a limit to how much I can dislike a Star Wars movie. But I said at the time, I think the night that I got home from the movie, I saw it Thursday night, I said, to me, in my mind, there are two types of Star Wars movies. Good Star Wars movies and bad Star Wars movies. You can decide which ones fit on that particular list. I put this one as a good Star Wars movie. It's, to me, the least of the good ones, but I still say it's a good one. And I'm thrilled that it's making a lot of money because I know I'm not even bother to get into it, but I know there was like a whole thing to try and like boycott this movie because, you know, it dares show evil people in a bad light. So I'm glad that the movie just told those people to shut the hell up and it's make a fortune because, you know, people are upset that, oh, it's another woman leading the Star Wars movie. No, screw you. You know, Star Wars,
that wasn't distracting at all.
No, Star Wars can do whatever it wants, and I'm really proud of Disney that they're doing this. They're making these movies more diverse. I love that we have female rebel pilots.
Okay.
Something we never had in the other
movies. Yeah, that was great. Here's what I would say about diversity, though. I agree. I think it's awesome that they're getting more diversity in the movies, more races, you know, women pilots and everything. One thing that stuck out to me, though, was the Asian character still can't shake the sage martial artist profile.
Okay.
So that to me was like, oh, even in a galaxy far, far away, they're blind, wise, and no martial arts. Okay. That's interesting.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I did like the idea that there are people that could be connected to the Force that are not Jedis.
Oh, yeah. And that's throughout the novels and the comics and, you know, even in The Force Awakens, you had, what's her name? I'm trying to remember. The little Yoda-like woman.
Oh, yeah, the Maz Kanata, yeah.
Yep.
Clearly
yep.
sensitive to the Force without being
yeah,
a Jedi.
Yeah, and I think that's
good.
I think that's totally fine. I think that's acceptable in the universe. In fact, I want to talk about that more on the other side of the spoiler talk.
Well, that's a perfect time. Let's get into spoilers. So, again,
okay,
if you haven't seen Rogue One yet, I don't know why you're even listening to this. I'm sure anyone that listens to the show has already seen Rogue One. But just in case you haven't, stop here.
Stop
here. You can skip to this little thing at the end, which I'll mention at the very end about the special surprise guest we have coming up. But now we're gonna do spoilers for Rogue One. So okay, Luke, have at
okay.
it. What's the thing you wanted to get into?
Okay, so the thing that I thought was interesting, is that there are these characters in the Star Wars universe that are receptive and sensitive to the Force, but they just haven't gone the Jedi way with it. So you know, they know this presence in their lives. They just haven't chosen to become a warrior with it. And that's one thing that I really enjoyed about Churin, I believe his name was, as a character. I liked that about him quite a bit. So at the end of the movie, he displays remarkable courage and heroism as he steps out into the middle of laser fire, chanting a mantra. The Force is, you know, the Force is with me and I'm in the Force or something like that, as he goes off to shut off the switch to the shield generator. And so tragically, after he's successful, he is tragically shot and dies. So what I wanted to see in this movie, throughout this movie, he has his friend. Do you remember his name?
Baze Malbus, played by Wen Zhang.
Yeah, Baze is sort of skeptical of his belief in the Force. He's kind of your Han Solo to Churin's Luke Skywalker / Obi-Wan Kenobi in A New Hope. And so when his friend is gunned down, what I would have loved to see in that moment is him to vanish and his cloak to crumple around him with nothing
Whoa,
in there.
Interesting.
Because we've only seen that twice in the Star Wars universe. We've seen it with Obi-Wan and we've seen it with Yoda. Wouldn't it be cool to say, like, hey, you don't have to be a Jedi to follow the Force. The Force is still with you. If you are a believer in the Force, it's with you wherever you are, no matter who you are. And to have his clothes, you know, fade empty like that, to me would have been like, holy crap, this is awesome. And then that would have been all the more impetus for his friend to really have that pivotal moment where he goes from being an unbeliever in the Force to a believer in the Force.
That's I really like that, Luke. I never even thought about that. That's terrific. That would have been that's a great idea.
So, wow. Yeah, lost opportunity. I really wanted to see that. I was holding my breath, like hoping, because we've only seen it twice. We've got to see it again at some point.
Right.
I want to see it again at some point.
Huh. That's really interesting. I like that idea a lot. Yeah, I thought I thought he was a good character. I thought Donnie Yen did a good job. I think I like the jokes. I like when they put the sack over his head. He's like, "Are you kidding? I'm blind."
Yeah.
Like, he was like, sense of humor.
Yeah.
I thought all that stuff was good. I what did you think about the first of the two digital characters? Because when I didn't know that they were going to do Grand Moff Tarkin. I sort of thought Tarkin would be in it. I assumed they were going to get an actor, just another actor. And then when I was oh my God, they're going full on digital recreation. I couldn't decide whether I was watching it and I'm going, this looks fake to me. This does not look real. And I couldn't figure out, does it
I felt the same way.
I was like, does it genuinely not look real, or does it not look real because I can't let my brain will not let me forget that Peter Cushing is dead. And I turned to Tracy at the end of the movie because I knew she wouldn't know this. And I said, and I didn't want to tip it. And I said, what did you think of the Grand Moff Tarkin character? And she's like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, and I don't want to say, did he look real? Because that tips it. And so I was like, well, what did you think? Did you have any problem with that character? And she's like, well, she's like, wasn't that guy in the original movie? And I said, yeah. And she goes, so that's not real, right? Because he would be older. And I was like, yeah, basically. And she goes, yeah. She goes, it looked a little weird to me, but most of the time I didn't think about it. So I was like, okay, I guess it worked. It just, it kept taking me out of the movie a little when I kept seeing him.
Yeah.
Like, they're still in that uncanny valley. They're really close, but they're not there.
Yeah, so I find that it's really hard to, with CG, to recreate a person in all its subtleties. I mean, it's just complicated to do. So no matter how good we get at it, you still can sense innately, this is not human. This is something other. That said, it was remarkably done. I felt like it kind of took me out a little bit too. I almost would have rathered they found somebody that was close enough and gone the rest of the way with practical effects in getting somebody to look like him.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly not doing that for the Han Solo movie. They've recast it, you know? I mean,
so
they know that there's a limitation to this. And I'm sort of interested on the screenplay stage, at what point did they decide to do this? Because it's like, do they decide before they even write page one, we're going to need Tarkin? Well, let's call Peter Cushing's family. You know what I mean? Or do they call Peter Cushing's family and see if they can do it first? I would love to know the sort of order of that process. I can see it would have been really hard to do this movie without Tarkin, but I think maybe an actor might have been the better way to go. And then the second one, of course, is the final shot of the movie,
which
is the recreation of Princess Leia. And that's another one where I'm like, it takes real balls to end your movie on a digital recreation of an actor. That takes real guts. And I don't know, I don't know if they quite pulled that off. I wonder if it would
I felt like they pulled it off better with Leia than they did with Tarkin.
Really?
Though.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did. And I thought it might have just been because they had less. She had to say less.
Right.
So, you know, they could really just nail it. I didn't have as much of a problem with her as I did with Tarkin. And probably because he had more longer speeches and presence in front of the camera. She just had to turn and give one line. Still, it was like, oh, that's digital.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if, like, they couldn't have just done a thing where it was a silhouette of her, and then you clearly would recognize the silhouette, and then you hear Carrie Fisher's voice, and then you go, oh, you know, hope, and then that's it. I guess I just
–
part of me is like, did you really need to see a big, juicy close-up of her face? I don't
know.
Now, I will say
– I agree. I think the silhouette probably would have been a far more powerful way to go, because then our imaginations will take care of the rest.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, I will admit, when I saw the movie the second time, it bothered me a lot less, but I still, I'm just like, just not exactly right. But leading
up to it was gutsy.
It was gutsy. I mean, like I said, we said in the pre-spoiler part, I really, this movie simultaneously plays it safe and then is also very gutsy, because I really didn't know that they were going to be so right up against Star Wars. I didn't think they were going to be that close. I mean, this movie literally hands us off to Star Wars.
Yeah.
I thought there would be some downtime between the end of this movie and then the beginning of Star Wars. But I mean, to that end, that scene with Darth Vader, holy crap. I mean, that is a horror
movie. So good.
That's a horror movie sequence jammed in the middle of this Star Wars movie. That is amazing to watch.
That was so good.
Those guys.
That was my favorite part of the whole movie. When he came through there, it was just cutting them down left and right, and you see the terror on their faces. They're trying to get away, and he's just slaying them.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
They can't get the door open, and the guy's like, "Just take it, just take it." That was masterful. Masterful. Yeah. And I think I said this on the episode where we did about Force Awakens, where, you know, I grew up with Star Wars being a complete thing. You know, like it was over. I was never going to hear Han Solo again. I knew that. That was over. And now that there is new Han Solo, It's kind of like, you know, when you know a movie so well, it becomes like a song, you know, where you just know the words and every little, you know every little snap and hiss and cry, you know, pop and crackle, and when something's changed, it jars you. And I feel that's why the special editions don't work, but that's a whole other conversation. But like,
sure.
I had to readjust my brain that there's new Han Solo now. There's new Han Solo dialogue for me to get used to when for 20, 30 years, there was one. There was three movies, and that's it. And except for that one unfortunate no at the end of Revenge of the Sith, there was no new Darth Vader. You know what I mean? There was just Darth Vader. And now I have a whole new scene of classic Darth Vader.
And now you also know that Darth Vader is a punster.
He does. He did a mic drop. He absolutely did a, yeah.
Yeah, which I didn't expect him to have a sense of humor, but he sort of did.
Yeah.
Don't choke on your ambitions.
Yeah. Vader out.
Dumb ching.
Yeah. I love the shot of him in the Bacta tank. I thought it was terrific. Like, oh God, he has to go through this nonsense probably every day, and he lives in that giant castle and all this crazy stuff.
What surprised me with that is like, isn't it by Empire that he gets pretty much pissed if anybody even sees him without his hat on? Isn't that worth getting choked? And here he is, like, fully in a Bacta tank, and everybody's just hanging out there.
Well, I guess he got more irritated as he went on.
Yeah.
You know, just whatever. Yeah. But, that scene of Vader is so terrific. I'm going to –
when that was
on,
cool.
When that's on home entertainment, I'm going to watch that, you know, like on a loop or something. Because it goes by so fast.
Yeah, it's a great visual.
As you said, I love how scared they are. The front guy's holding the gun, and he's, like, shaking his hand because he's just like, what the hell is this? You just hear that, and then the lightsaber comes out. Oh,
yeah.
My Lord. Like, well done, Gareth Edwards. That was tremendous.
Yeah, that was my favorite sequence of the movie, and probably the only real sequence of the movie where I had an actual raw primal emotion attached to it.
It was really, really good. And I said I liked all the other little side characters and the little cameo from C-3PO and R2-D2. I thought that was fine. And
yeah, that was
sort
fun.
Of the sort of new stand-in for Admiral Akbar with that guy. And even the final scene, you're talking about emotions, even that final scene I thought on the beach with Jyn and Cassian as they wait for the wave of destruction to envelop them was pretty powerful and really very chilling because I said I'm old enough to remember The Day After, that TV movie about living after a nuclear war. And, like, the idea of just sitting there and knowing it's coming, that's really pretty terrifying. And that's gutsy to put in a Star Wars movie aimed at children. There were a lot of little kids in my screening that I went to,
kids.
You know, and trying to explain, all the heroes die, honey. All of our heroes
die. They don't get away, Daddy.
Yeah, no. You can play with their action figures, but just know they're all dead. I will say again, like I said in the pre-spoiler, Forrest Whitaker does not need to be in this movie. He's a completely like. Did you see Inglourious Basterds?
Yes.
Okay. The movie has the same opening with the Nazis coming to visit the house and looking for someone. And in that movie, the one Jewish daughter gets away, and you could have done the same thing. And Jyn, instead of Jyn being taken in by another guy, she could have been like a street waif, and she grew up like I just don't understand why you have this character, why you have Saul Guerrero in the movie at all.
I don't know. Maybe he contacted Disney and said, "I want to be in Star Wars."
I don't know. When they wrote it, I just think they would have been like, wait, why are we going? It just seems like, why are we adding this extra step? And when he dies, when he died in the movie, I was so happy because I'm like, oh, good. We don't have to deal with him anymore. Like, I just was so, when he was like, I'm not leaving. I'm just going to stand here and take off my breathing mask. I was like, good. Get out. I don't care. You know?
Yeah, even his death, though, felt like, really? You don't have room for one more guy in a ship?
Yeah,
I mean, not that I cared one way or the other, sadly. But that was my reaction. Like, really? You can't, it's a pretty big ship. Like you could probably get away if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Really? Seriously.
Yeah.
There's standing room for one.
I guess cause he's so slow or something. Yeah. I just thought it was just superfluous. And considering I thought that the first hour sort of just dripped by so slowly, I just thought what a weird plot device to have this totally extraneous character that you could just jigger the screenplay and have her go directly to the father. And that's it. And so I will say, I love the idea that, you know, look, it never bothered me in Star Wars that the Death Star has this flaw in it that makes it blow up real good. That never bothered me. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it didn't bother me either.
That's pretty silly that they would build this, you know, this weapon that cost $40 octillion in real money, and they would build a fuse in the middle of it. But it never bothered me. But I also liked the idea that it was that they forced a guy to build it, and so as revenge, he stuck a fuse in the middle of it. I think that's a great turn. I think that's really clever that he's like, this is going to be my final FU to the Empire, that I built this thing in there. I thought that was really clever. And then he names it after her. I thought that was really terrific.
Yeah. No, I really liked that too. It felt a little bit like pandering to the trolls online. Like, no, really, there was a reason. The exhaust was set up that way. The exhaust port was set up that way so it could blow up the entire Death Star. On one hand, I felt like, come on. But then, you know, I liked it too. With a lot of this movie, I felt like, again, like, I just feel like I'm sort of on the fence with it. Like, I liked it. I didn't like it. I mean, solid B minus in my book. But yeah, it wasn't bad. I liked that it was his, the file was named after his daughter, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. I mean, I said I did like it. Now, in the grand hierarchy of Star Wars movies, I'm putting you on the spot here. Where would you rank them? Like all of them? I'm just sort of curious as to what in your,
okay,
not necessarily you think are the best films, but like your in your favorite.
My personal favorites?
Your personal list.
My personal list is top. The top is Empire.
Okay.
And it goes to A New Hope, then Jedi, then Force Awakens, then Rogue One, then Sith, then Phantom Menace, and then Clone Wars.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right. My list is almost virtually the same. I have Star Wars at the top simply because it's the first one I ever saw, and it's the whole thing. And then I have Empire, Jedi, Force Awakens, Rogue One, and then I do Sith, Clone, Phantom Menace. That's based. So we have a very, very similar list. So I'm very excited about these other movies. I hope that Disney, I mean, they're already filming Han Solo, so I don't think there's a whole lot they can do with it. But I hope that Disney realizes that these other side movies don't need to connect to the main films. Like, I don't want to see Alden Ehrenreich walk into the Mos Eisley Cantina at the end of the Solo movie. And, oh, look, there's Ben Kenobi. Like, I don't want that. just give me an adventure with Han Solo and Lando Calrissian and Chewie, and I'll love it. I don't need it to connect up to Star Wars in any way. That'll be perfectly
I would go a step further and say, like, don't even use characters that we know. Like, with Han Solo, Harrison Ford is Han Solo. They're kind of inseparable to me, and I know they've found a great actor to play the role, and I'm sure he'll do a wonderful job. But it's not going to be Harrison Ford. It's not going to have the same dynamics. It's not going to have all the subtle, you know, smiles and sarcasm and dry humor that he brings to a role. So why bother? It's like when DC Comics like takes a character, changes everything about him but the name. And says, no, this is that character. Right. No, it's not really that character to me anymore. I kind of feel the same way with a Han Solo movie. It's not, you know, Harrison Ford was Han Solo. You can't replace that. So to me, I'm excited about the expanded Star Wars universe in film. I just feel like there's galaxies to explore. So don't stick with the same characters. Let somebody else, you know, especially too, because I feel like this will be limiting to whatever actor takes on this role to have to be playing Harrison Ford playing Han Solo rather than just stepping into a role. I mean, and there, you kind of felt that same similar disconnect, I think, in Superman Returns. Mm. Even though Brandon Routh did a great job, and there were times it was so terrifyingly similar to Christopher Reeve that you're like, oh, my gosh. But still, he's limited in that role now because he's having to be somebody else being
right.
that role rather than just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm hopeful. I always get optimistic about these, especially Star Wars. I love this universe. I want to, you know, I want to be here over and over again. But shoot, there's so many great stories to tell and so many characters left to be explored. You know, go find them. Go tell their story. Give somebody else a chance to just be themselves on screen. I think that's what will really resonate with, rather than somebody doing a caricature of Harrison Ford for a couple hours.
Yeah, I hear you. I was dubious about a Han Solo movie, and there have been two things that have made me sort of change my mind a little. Is that one, I think the other casting news we've heard about this movie is so good. Like, I love the idea of Donald Glover as young Lando Calrissian. I'm like, just give me that movie. Holy crap, do I want to see that. So the idea of Alden Ehrenreich, who I thought was the best thing about Hail Caesar, the last Coen Brothers movie, and okay. Donald Glover, those two just being young Han and young Lando, I'm like, give me, okay, I'm sold. Let me see that movie. And then the other thing was, I was utterly convinced when they were going to reboot Star Trek that there was no way to recast Captain Kirk. I was like, I'm like, you cannot do that. Shatner and Kirk are one person at this point. They are not. You can't do it. And they did it. They did.
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good point.
I think Chris Pine is a terrific Captain Kirk, and he's not doing Shatner. He's doing his own version of that braggadocio guy. And so now I say, if you can recast Kirk, you can virtually recast any role. And so that's why
a little less,
we'll find out. We'll find out. I mean,
yeah, we'll find out. It was easier for me to get on board with the Star Trek reboot and their franchise just because I was less emotionally connected to the original Star Trek films. So I actually really liked the reboot.
Right. And I think it was gutsy in this film that, you know, this is not going to be a franchise. These are one-off characters. I think is gutsy to do. You know, hey, we're not going to make three films of the Rogue One team. No, they're all dead. That's it. That's a pretty gutsy thing to do.
There's no going forward from here.
Yeah.
I didn't even really realize that because I had kind of stayed away from a lot of the talk about the movie beforehand. I didn't want to go in tainted in one way or the other.
Right.
So I was like, where's this going to go? Are they going to do a trilogy with these guys? You know?
Yep.
At the end, nope.
Nope.
I guess not.
Okay.
I guess it's done.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I said I did enjoy it. I do have my issues with it, but I thought Rogue One was very enjoyable, and I'm glad it's making a lot of money because we're going to get to do more of these movies in this universe, and it really is just kind of an amazing thing that there's so much Star Wars now when it was nothing. It was after 1983, it was over, and now it's just I'm getting to see all kinds of stormtroopers and AT-ATs again and X-wing fighters.
The action was amazing. Yeah. The action, the ships. I mean, this is everything that's been in our imagination since we were kids.
Yeah.
This is how we saw Star Wars.
Now it's
coming to life.
You get to see a Star Destroyer smash into another Star Destroyer. Who didn't do that when you were, 9 years old? That's what you did. You know, you just smash these toys into one another. So yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. I did enjoy it. We have my reservations, but I did enjoy it. So I think this is going to do it for these two big releases. Luke, thank you so much for
doing this, welcome,
man. I mean, I have to say, I didn't know anybody that was excited about La La Land, and I knew I wanted to talk about the movie, and so you wrote to me like a month ago and said, hey, have you heard of this movie, La La Land? I said, yeah. And you were like, do you want to do it? And I thought, oh, this is awesome, because I really wanted to talk about it. So thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. I adored that movie. Yeah.
Awesome.
I about snuck into another theater after we watched Star Wars to watch La La Land again. I poked I poked my head in and I saw that there were some empty seats in the front. I was like, maybe I could go again. Three movies in one day.
Ooh, I did that once. I did that one time.
Did you really?
Yeah, that is not advisable.
It's a lot. I got home, I was pretty fried, especially after sitting in the front row. But yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. It was, I've really enjoyed talking about these films. And I hope I'm not being too negative about Rogue One. I think it's worth seeing for sure. It's a good movie. It's not a perfect movie, but it's a good movie. It's definitely up there.
Hey, you know, we're nerds, and nerds expect a lot out of Star Wars, and that's not a bad thing. That's not a thing. You know what I mean? I mean, Star Wars is special.
We went years waiting for these movies.
Yeah, I mean, and I would always argue that even, prequels aside, to me, even mediocre Star Wars is better than most other movies. Because it's Star Wars. It's still Star Wars. And before we sign off, I want to ask, want you to get your plug in. Where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me all over the internet. They would best find me using the handle Daab Creative, DAAB Creative. I'm on Twitter, Facebook. I have a Facebook page for my artwork. And then there's just my website where I do freelance work, and I feature a lot of the comic art that I've done. So that's daabcreative.com. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right,
Instagram, cool. Same thing.
All right, very cool. And you're on Patreon too.
Yep, on Patreon. Yep.
Yeah, very cool. Of course, you can find this show over on Twitter at Film and Water Pod, and you can find this and all of our great shows over on our network site, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. So I teased it earlier, and I mentioned it in the show notes that this show has a special surprise guest, and we're gonna get to that in a moment. I figured it was this was the appropriate time to bring in someone who has been requested to be on the show, and that person is my mom. My mom is a harsh reviewer of movies that she does not like, as indicated when we talked about Superman 4, Quest for Peace. But my mom was with me the night I saw Star Wars in 1977, and so I decided to sit with her and get her honest recollection. Luke has heard this. This is why he's laughing.
You guys will really enjoy this.
Yeah, yeah. I decided to sit down with my mom and get an honest recollection from her as what it was like for her to be in the theater that night and to watch Star Wars as it unspooled for the first time. So we're not gonna come back from this. We're just gonna let it play out. So I hope all of you that have requested from my mom to be on the show, I hope you enjoy it. I had a lot of fun talking to my mom about this. So I hope you enjoyed this clip. This is just a couple of minutes of my mom and me talking about what it was like to see Star Wars in May of 1977. So after this, the show is gonna play out. So enjoy this appearance by my mom talking about Star Wars. Take it away, Mom.
All right, Mom. So it's 1977. What are your memories of going to see Star Wars?
Well, my memories of going to see Star Wars is that I thought, how could I possibly miss this movie? It's been advertised and promoted, and I just thought, how could I not see this epic movie? And all the hoopla about it was like, I've got to see it. I mean, how could I not see it? Not knowing what it was really about, I went with my son and my husband.
So it was just the three of us? I don't really remember. So it was really just the three of us?
I believe it was just the three of us.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of recall that. And I was sitting there, and the lights went down, and the movie started, and this thunderous music played. And I thought, wow, I'm in for something really epic here, which I had heard. And I thought, I'm part of this this genre, which I wouldn't normally be at 1977. Robert was only 6 years old.
Right?
And I thought, okay,
not even six, actually.
Just about
not even
six.
Yeah.
Yeah, just about six. And I thought, okay, here we go. I'm part of this generation now. And the lights went down, like I said, and the music was thundering. And it scrolled over my head.
The words, right?
All the words
on
scrolled
the screen,
over
right?
my head. And
sure.
I thought, wow, this is awesome. Okay. 3-4 minutes into the movie, I keep on, I look at my son. He's having a ball. I look at my husband. He's mesmerized. And I'm thinking, what the heck am I doing in this thing? So I keep on looking for a kind of a sky-lit scene to come on, which there wasn't too many of, but I see this big gray thing going over my head, thundering over my head. I guess it was the missile, or whatever they call it.
Star Destroyer,
okay. And I thought, that's different. Never saw a movie like that before. And so, like I say, I keep on looking for like some kind of a light sky scene, so I can look at my watch and say, what time is it? Oh, my God. It's only 10 minutes in. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I sat there like, you have got to be kidding. I was bamboozled into coming to this, and it was probably one of the worst movies I ever saw. The only thing I did enjoy was the music. But, and then... It was like it was just horribly painful to sit through something that I had no interest
All
in.
Right. Okay.
That's it.
And that's why you never came to any of the other ones? Because I saw Empire with Dad and Susan, so that's why you never went to any of the other ones.
Want nothing to do with any of that genre at all. I mean, the Wookiee, good. I mean, C-3PO and all those things are very interesting, but not my kind of movie.
Here's the new Star Wars Death Star space station that you put together. Action figures each sold separately.
Darth Vader's firing a laser cannon.
It's been hit. He's after Luke. Take the elevator. Hurry.
Now cross the light bridge.
You won't escape me.
Jump, Luke.
Oh, no. The trash compactor. There's a trash monster.
The wall's closing.
Save.
Kenner's new Star Wars Death Star space station. Action figures each sold separately.